Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another weekly episode of Booker T. Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum. This is your host, Professor Marshall Washington Cabinets Abui. And we're going to begin our program with a brief commercial, and then we'll play some introductory music, relaxing music, as we wait for our panelists and our guests to arrive.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinets Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, we're back, and we want to welcome our veteran panelists, Mr. Piaki, as we wait for others to join us. We want to also announce our topic for tonight, and then we'll begin our dialogue, our conversation, begin with comments from Mr. Bianchi. But we want to say welcome to you, Mr. Bianchi, and we hope that you have had a good Saturday here as we get ready to close out the first month of this new year of 2019. So, how are you tonight? Okay, I see what we have going on here. I didn't turn your microphone on. So here we go. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. It's been a great, restful weekend for me. I had a busy beginning of the week, traveled to give an address out in a country town in Georgia for Martin Luther King Day. And so that's a segue to actually announce the topic for tonight. Which is, now that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a public school holiday, should schools still use time on a normal school day to have special Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration programs? So let me repeat that. Now that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a public school holiday, should schools still use time on a normal school day to have special Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration programs? And also, I want to announce at this time that during the second hour of the program, we will broadcast the Dr. Martin Luther King Day address that I gave on this past Monday in a small town in Georgia to help the people of that community celebrate Martin Luther King Day. But the main question is the question we asked about the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy during regular school time, when in fact there's going to be a whole day of no school to celebrate it. So let us go ahead and begin with you. We have hopefully a group that will come on hasn't arrived yet, but let's go ahead and begin with you. What do you think, Mr. Bianchi?
Well, that should be up to the community, Marshall. Community can do whatever they see fit. I don't celebrate the holiday myself personally, but there are those that do. But as far as what the question you posed is, that's dependent on the community.
Okay, well, that's a very, very reasonable answer, and I wish we had some others that we could ask that question to, but we have not seen them appear in the studio yet. And so we'll just go ahead and deal with that. My perspective is that I believe personally, it's my own opinion, that the normal school day should be occupied with carrying out the curriculum that the Board of Education, that should be guided by the wishes of the community. That the curriculum has so many hours of time that has been actually set aside for the various instruction in different courses that have to be taught. So therefore, if my curriculum, if I were a history teacher, required that I teach 5 hours of history, American or world history per week, and the principal decided that they wanted to have an hour that was coincided with the time I would normally be teaching my class, and I had a lesson plan already designed for each day of the week for my hour. What I personally would prefer is that he allowed me to include in my lesson plan some history concerning the context of Martin Luther King's life and his work so that the students would actually acquire some knowledge related to the subject that I was supposed to be teaching during that hour, rather than taking the students out of class and taking them to the gym or to the assembly hall, because that's the situation I find now, is that many of the schools that are being built don't have assembly halls. They use the basketball court or the gym with the bleachers for these programs. But rather than take the students out of class, which basically makes them not be able to get the instruction that's in the curriculum, so that they can hear speeches. And sometimes these speeches may be relevant, teaching history, but sometimes they may be just what I would call motivational or inspirational speeches, which I do a lot of that. So there is time, I guess, in the curriculum for these kinds of activities. But since they're already reserving a whole day out of school for this kind of activity to happen, I personally think that I would rather have the students stay in the classroom, especially in my history classroom, where I could actually teach them as an educator about Dr. King and about that period in American history. But, you know, as a teacher, that's just my particular personal opinion. At any rate, I invite your comment on that, but you've already told me your position, and I'm still waiting for others to join to get their opinion. But certainly the floor is open if you wanted to comment on what I just said.
No, that sounds pretty well.
Well, that's my, you know, my position, because, you know, I personally support the idea of having a community celebration during the 8th been set aside for a national holiday, you know, so that's all fine and everything. But then again, I don't think in addition to taking students out of school for that day, they should take school time away from learning the coursework to read what I would say, you know, to have another time when they already have given them a whole day for that. I'm an old friend, you know, personal friend of Martin Luther King Jr., and I was involved with his civil rights work, marched on a number of different occasions with him or with his leadership. He wasn't always there physically when I marched along with the program that he set up, but there were times in famous Selma to Montgomery March where I was present, not during the 50-mile trek from Selma, but at the finale as the marchers came down the highway and came into Montgomery. I met them at the City of Emerson, marched to the place where he spoke. But the fact of the matter is that regardless of my admiration for him and the real approval of having a holiday for him, I still think that the school day, the school, what I would say, schedule should accomplish certain educational goals. And I'm an old traditionalist that believes in the 3 hours of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And basics, and many of these students aren't really getting enough of the basics, and they're leaving school, high school, being functionally illiterate. And so I don't think we should contribute to that by taking away time when they could be practicing their skills when we already given them a day to celebrate. But that's my personal opinion. I have advertised the you know, the show on my Facebook page and gotten some responses, and therefore I expected that we would have others that would have joined in to contribute to the discussion. But what I'm going to do, Ms. Bianca, if you want to stay with us, fine, but what I'm going to do in the meantime while I'm waiting for others is just use a little bit of time to preview for those that may be interested, who are listening via the internet, my writing. You may have heard in the past some preview of my book, but I'm just going to take this opportunity while we're waiting. If you want to dial back in later, if you've heard this information, certainly that's fine. But I'm going to go ahead and use this time to preview, you know, something that I wrote as part of my publication. So we're going to go ahead and do that now. And while I'm actually getting ready to pull that up, I'm just going to probably go and play our anthem that we usually play at the end of the show. Actually, the fact of the matter is that I'm having a little computer difficulty. So I will just be working on that tech issue. And until I get it resolved, we'll just have a silent moment. Unless you wanted to speak while I'm working on that. Unfortunately, I'm using a brand new computer that decided it wanted to be on lockdown for a minute here, which is kind of strange. But we'll get it worked out, hopefully soon. Okay. I don't know how long that will take. Not working. But in the meantime, mention something, and of course, I don't want to start a controversy, but it did. I didn't mention anything about it at the time, but it did quirk my interest when you said you don't celebrate the Martin Luther King holiday. If I heard you correctly, do you object to telling us why? Is there a particular
reason? Well,
reason?
We just don't celebrate. You know, my grandson went to a school that didn't take off for Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Okay.
They took off the 26th, the beginning of Kwanzaa, but they didn't. They went to school on Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But no, I don't celebrate. You know, people work that day in my business. Nobody wants to. You don't get paid, so you don't work, you don't get paid. So your jobs work. Mm-hmm.
But I certainly appreciate that. You know, I work because I'm invited to go to different places to give speeches, which is part of, you know, my professional life. However, if I did not go to some place to do that particular function, I would probably be working in my own home office, even if my actual place of employment at the university was closed, because I still have things that have to be accomplished. But I see now that my dearly beloved sister-in-law, Stephanie, has arrived, and I'm so happy that she is here on the show. And so, Stephanie, how are you doing?
I am good. I have to turn my television down. Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen, Stephanie, I don't know if you know the topic, but let me reiterate the topic for tonight, and that is this. Now that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a public school holiday, should schools still use time on a normal school day to have special Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration programs? What do you think about that?
Oh, I think most definitely, because he was such an important figure in our society, someone to look up to. He led the way for people of all nationalities, and for peace, and for human rights, and it's very important what he was out there teaching and leading. So yes, I think it's important to keep that very much alive in the school system as well as in our society. Period.
Okay.
I thank God for Dr. Martin Luther King and people like you too, my brother.
Well, that's
thank
so
you.
Kind of you for the second half of the program, and we may not wait until the hour is up, depending on whether we have others that join us to involve in the conversation. If we don't get any others to join us, we'll probably move right into what I had planned for the second half of the program, which is to play the recording of the address that I gave on Martin Luther King Day this past Monday. And so we'll just wait and see for a couple of minutes if we have any other suggestions, because I don't want to start recording and then someone comes on and I stop to let them talk. So we'll just give it a few minutes. And as I had mentioned just before you came on, but you can elaborate if you would like, but otherwise I was going to actually play an excerpt from my book while we were waiting to see if anybody else was going to join us. And if nobody does in the next 5 minutes, then we'll go right into me playing the recording of the talk, the address that I gave on Monday for Martin Luther King Day. But did you want to elaborate on what you just said?
No, I'd like to hear the speech. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to go ahead, and just so we can wait and see if anybody else joins us to participate in the conversation. And while we're waiting, I'll just go ahead and play an excerpt from my book. I do see that we do have, that just recently joined us, a personal friend, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, who I want to welcome to the program. And Brother Minister, assalamu alaikum. How are you this evening?
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Ali. I'm Imam Abui. How are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine, and we want to say welcome and thank you for joining us. And I want to share the topic with you so we can get your comment on the topic. Our topic for tonight is now that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a public school holiday, should schools still use time on a normal school day to have special Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration programs? And I also want to mention to you that after we have had our discussion, which may go for the whole first hour, or it may not, then we will broadcast Dr. Martin Luther King Day that I gave on this past month. So there's some background noise. If someone is not on speaking, please mute your telephone so that we won't have the background noise, if you don't mind. Okay, yeah. So anyway, Brother Minister, what do you think about that particular question? What's your response?
Well, I would say that inasmuch as Dr. King's birthday has been made a national holiday, then the children should know how that came about, and something about the man to whom this country celebrates, especially in as much as he was such a part of the civil rights movement that that led to so many changes in this country as far as black people are concerned. People of color, I think that's the word they commonly use. I would say that it is befitting. Just a shame that that the curricula is not more expanded than that, you know, targeted specifically to Dr. King's life, because his life and what, you know, it got to please him, what his life, I say, encapsulated or provided the, I say, the last straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. So many other things that happened in this country, that it culminated with Dr. King's, primarily from my view, having lived through that era myself, and as the grandson of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I was pleased with him, and seeing the various directions the country sort of went in, and then have us to lose Dr. King in such a tragic way, trying to break up a garbage strike, for Teamsters. It really marked a very sad turning point in this country. But as he said, I won't be there with you. But I've seen the coming, great coming of the coming of the Lord. Longevity is good, but it really sounds very much like a farewell address. And as we came to witness, it was all of that. Struck down at 39 years old. Just like Minister Malcolm, he was 39 years old. Black people find themselves martyring themselves to things they believe in. I really feel as though that it's a tragedy that we don't write our own books, and when it comes to the curricula, and that's the reason why. I think I mentioned one of the earlier programs about the fact that I was fortunate to have been raised in a private school set up by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam, grammar school, high school, the teachers, each of the teachers we had, especially there in Chicago, they were had to be personally interviewed by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Most of our teachers were from the South, because in the South, the teachers in the South, they seem to know and understand, and for a black student even to be considered on the same par as a Caucasian student in this country, then he had to be like 150%, in order to get the same kind of respect, hopefully, even, But, it's quite befitting that they educate our young people, to understand what Dr. King's life was all about and how it was the culmination of so much more. But their willingness to share, what was the catalyst of all of this, that's a whole different story, because they had, public schools have an American flag flying over the school, which that in itself tells you that, the education that is given there is going to represent what they consider to support the value systems represented by the flag that flies over the school, I'll yield the floor to anyone else want to make a comment on that. Sound like him?
Well, I can hear you. I don't know if we're having some discrepancies. I can hear you fine.
Yes, ma'am.
Continue.
I would, I was waiting to hear from Imam Abui, the marshal. Imam, are you there?
Actually, what happened? I put my phone on mute while you were talking, but I'm back on the air now. And I just wanted to say that if Sister Stephanie would wait just a second, I want to ask Ms. Pianca, would you like to respond to what Minister Muhammad Ali said?
No, I have nothing.
Okay, all right. Would you like, for the benefit of our audience to just tune in, though, to reiterate your response when I asked you at the beginning of the program what your response to the question was?
Well, I said that it's up to the people in the community if that's what they want to do. Yeah, I may mention that I don't celebrate the holiday in the workplace. Our employers worked, and my grandkids went to schools that had school on Thanksgiving and Christmas. But the people in the community wants that. That's up to them.
Okay, I want to go ahead and then I'll bring Stephanie on because you may want to also respond to what I say in addition to what you heard from Minister Muhammad Ali and also Ms. Bianchi. But my position that I stated, being an educator myself, and I happen to know that the school board, along with guidance from the state school superintendent, establishes a curriculum which includes a certain amount of instructional hours per week to cover certain subjects that the students must become proficient in order to be considered educated or to be able to graduate. And so each hour that is on that schedule should be devoted to something related to that curriculum. So I was just mentioning before we had others that joined us, that if our was to be on a schedule that normally I would be teach American history, that they want to have a program during the school week, I would prefer, rather than to have a celebratory program, it's already going to give students a whole day off to attend a program like that, is to allow me to use that hour and have it written into the curriculum to present a lesson plan talking about Martin Luther King and his legacy and the context in which he actually did his work that he became famous for. And rather than take it out of the classroom, and then take them into the gym where they may have the, you know, program scheduled to occur, let them stay in the classroom and let the teachers take time to share some actual factual information to help to educate them so that they actually are fulfilling part of the curriculum requirements during that time. But I'm saying that, you know, as a teacher, but now I'll turn it over to you, Stephanie, would you like to reiterate your position or respond to what I or Minister Muhammad said or what Mr. Bianchi said?
Okay, yes. I still stand firm with having respect for this holiday, and I do believe that it should be taught in the schools, even if it's on a day that's not on the holiday. It is an important part of our history, and the struggle is real. It was real then, and it still is. And a lot of people went through so much to get through that barrier. Things were so horrible. People not allowed to vote, and so forth and so on. We all know the history. And that needs to be remembered respectfully and celebrate it. It is definitely something to thank God for and to celebrate. Thank God for Dr. Martin Luther King and others like him. And like I said, you also, my brother. Thank you.
Okay, well, I want to do this, and then we'll move into playing the recording of the address that I gave on Martin Luther King Day. But this is an excerpt from a book that is entitled At the Dark End of the Street, and the actual subtitle is Black Women, Rape and Resistance, A New History of the Civil Rights Movement from Rosa Parks to the Rise of Black Power. The author is Danielle McGuire. And this particular book is a very, very important addition to the plethora of works that have been done about that period, which I also grew up in. I was 12 years old when the Montgomery bus boycott actually began on December 5th, 1955. It was my 12th birthday. This book was actually published in 2010. I just want to share an excerpt from it. Many people don't realize that Rosa Parks was not the first black person to go to jail for refusing to give up her seat on a Montgomery bus. And then actually there was a 10th grade student who was on a bus. Her name was Claudette Colvin, and she was attending Booker T. Washington High School, and she boarded the Highland Gardens bus near Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, which was where Martin Luther King pastored during the bus boycott after school on March the 2nd, 1955. And Claudette Colvin had spent the school day studying Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth, black heroes, and how they broke down Jim Crow laws, as she put it. And each student during the day had brought in articles about racial violence and discrimination. And her class spent the afternoon of March the 2nd, 1955, talking about the bleak racial conditions in Montgomery, Alabama. So by the time that she boarded the school bus, city bus, Claudette Colvin was filled with resentment over the city's double standard of justice. Now, this is a 10th grade student. So she flopped down in the rear section reserved on the bus for colored passengers. So at the next stop, passengers climbed aboard and filled the remaining seats, and the first 10 rows of the bus were reserved for whites, with blacks in the back. And I remember this very well because I've ridden on those buses. They had a big, thick white line that was in the aisle separating the black section from the white section. The ironic thing is that white people could occupy seats in the black section if they ran out of seats in the white section, but under no circumstances could black people move forward of that line. Anyway, a white couple this lady named Miss Ruth Hamilton, who was visibly pregnant, sat down to Claudette Colvin. Then a white couple squeezed into the last two seats directly across from them. Now, remember, their line was in front of Claudette Colvin and this other lady who was pregnant. So what was happening is now the seats in the white section had filled up, so this white couple sat back in the seats in the black section. Now, when the bus driver who saw that the color line had been breached because black and white people were not supposed to sit across from one another, even in the so-called black section, then he basically told them they had to move and leave the two seats they were sitting in vacant because they weren't supposed to be sitting across from white people, even in the black section. Well, the pregnant lady, Ruth Hamilton, refused to give up her seat, and she put her hands on her protruding belly, and she told the bus driver that she was not going to give up because she didn't feel like it. And So the driver felt uncomfortable asking this pregnant woman to relinquish her seat. You have to give him a little credit for that. So he turned to the young teenager, not teenager, but well, teenager, 10th grade student, and told her she had to move and when he was going to call the police if she didn't move. And remember, she's already sitting in the color section, but just because some white people sat across the aisle from her, the bus driver said she had to move and basically move back. And she did not budge. So he climbed, finally he pulled the bus to the curb in the middle of the downtown business district and locked the passengers in and walked away, and then soon returned with two policemen. When the officers came on the bus, they stood over both the pregnant lady, Miss Ruth Hamilton, and Claudette Colvin, the teenager, stand down at the women and told them to move. So a black man who was seated behind the pregnant lady offered her his seat, which she accepted, leaving the teenager alone. And so the police wanted to know why she ignored the bus driver's order and said that it was against the law for her to stay in that seat. And this teenager, who had already been riled up as a result of the class that they had had earlier, she said, "I didn't know that was against, that it was a law that a colored person had to get up and give a white person a seat when there was not any more vacant seats and the colored people were standing up." And so the point is, to get to the point, the police arrested her. And so they took her to jail. And she was afraid that she might be raped in jail. So she said that she, to keep her spirit up, she recited scripture and also some poems. She recited the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," and also the Lord's Prayer. And it just so happened that word had gotten back to the civil rights leaders, including a friend of mine named Fred Gray, and also a man named E.D. Nixon, who was the head of the civil rights movement that spearheaded the bus boycott, and they bailed out of jail. But the stage had already been set for what Rosa Parks did, because it was already determined that this had to stop. So I just wanted to give that little bit of a little background of what was going on. And the reason why I did that was because I believe that during the time, if they want to have something to be able to acknowledge Dr. King and his legacy during the regular school day, in addition to having the holiday, they should make people become familiar with this actual history so they understand the temperament and the spirit of those people that were eventually involved in that struggle in that bus boycott. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and we're going to shift gears now a little bit earlier than we had planned, but we pretty much exhausted the comments from our panelists tonight. And so what we want to do is to go ahead and to play the speech that we did actually give on this past Monday for the Martin Luther King program at a small country church here in Georgia.
We thought maybe, just maybe, he would lead us on a march one more time. He said, "But I'm through marching."
All right.
He says, "It's up to y'all now." And so the late Honorable Julian Bond, who may be someone you're familiar with, was there.
All right.
And he said, "Let's go and let's follow Martin Luther King's directions and let's keep on marching." And he marched the 30 or some of us up to Booker T. Washington High School. And as we marched around the statue of my great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington, I thought about what Dr. King had said, and I said, as a young man of only about 24 years old, I said, I've got to get started following what he told us to do.
All right.
And here I am tonight.
All right.
I'm glad we have some young people here because I want to share a message with you that's really for the young people, but we all can benefit. And this message was given 6 months before he passed, but many of these things I had heard him say during the course of my association with him, and maybe some of them you will remember. I heard just a little while ago, I heard some of the words recited by Sister Betty McClendon, and so you've heard these things, but I just want to share them together with the rest of my talk. But the purpose of this talk is to help the young people to understand something about life's blueprint. Dr. King said, I want to ask you a question, and that is, what is in your life's blueprint? This is a most important and crucial period in your lives for what you do now and what you decide now at this age may well determine which way your life will go.
All right.
He said, whenever a building is constructed, you usually have an architect who draws a blueprint, mm-hmm. and that blueprint serves as the pattern, as the guide, and as the model for those who are to build the building. And a building is not well erected without a good, solid, and sound blueprint.
All right.
Now each of you is in the process of building the structure of your lives. And the question is whether you have a proper, a solid, and a sound blueprint. I want to suggest some things that should be in your life's blueprint.
All right.
Number one, in your life's blueprint should be a deep belief in your own dignity,
All right.
your own worth, and your own somebody-ness. Right. Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody.
Right.
Always feel that you count.
Yeah.
And always feel that you have worth. And always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Now, that means that you should not be ashamed of your color.
Uh-huh.
You know that it is very unfortunate that in so many instances our society has placed a stigma on the Negro's color.
Uh-huh.
You know that there are some Negroes who are ashamed of themselves.
Right.
Don't be ashamed of your color.
Right.
Don't be ashamed of your biological features.
Yes.
Somehow you must be able to say in your own lives and really believe it, I am black but beautiful.
Yes.
And believe it in your heart.
Yes.
And therefore, you should not be lured into purchasing cosmetics advertised to make you lighter.
All right. All right.
And neither do you need to process your hair or buy somebody else's hair
right.
to make it appear straight.
Right.
I have good hair.
All right.
And it is as good as anybody else's
yeah.
hair in the world.
All right.
And we have to believe. We have to believe that.
Amen.
Now, in your life's blueprint, be sure that there are some principles. And one is the principle of somebody-ness.
Yes. Yes.
And secondly, in your life's blueprint, you must have as a basic principle the determination to achieve excellence
right.
in your fields of endeavor.
Yes.
As Dr. Nobles has achieved great excellence
mm.
in many fields of endeavor. Each one of you should look at all of your role models in your community and strive as I strove to achieve the excellence that I saw and I'm still trying in Dr. Martin Luther King.
All right.
You are going to be deciding as the days and the years unfold. You're going to be deciding what you will do with your life.
Yes.
I'm 75 years old, and I'm still trying to work out God's plan for my life. But don't wait. Start now to decide what you will do with your life. I decided when I was 9 years old that I wanted to be a preacher of God's word. And I've been preaching for over 60 years. And I still am trying to live up to that mighty, mighty example of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who is the greatest preacher the world has known. We're all a work in progress, but start now to develop yourself. And listen, once you discover what your work will be in your life, set out to do it and to do it well. We've all been tested. Some of us were straight A students, and some of us got a D every now and then. I remember when I got my first D. I had a couple. And one of them was in penmanship. I used to admire the girls in my second and third grade class because they had such beautiful penmanship. And I didn't want to be girly, so I tried to write rough. And for me, trying to write rough, I got a D. Well, I can truthfully say that I've learned to do better. But listen, my young friends, as Martin Luther King said, the doors are opening now to each of you. Doors of opportunity are opening to each of you that were not open to your mothers and fathers. And the great challenge facing you today is to be ready to enter those doors as they open. I remember a great military man that I knew personally. His name was General Chappie James. He was the first full general, four-star general in the United States Armed Forces. And I met him when he was not a general. I met him when he was a captain. And later I saw him, because we were friends, when he was a colonel. And I was 12 years old, and I looked up to him and I said, "Are you going to become a general?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "But they don't want me to be a general." He said, "All of the officers that became officers when I did that are still in the military, they're generals except for me." He said, "But they're not going to stop me." He said, "I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stick around because sooner or later, they're going to have to make me a general."
All right.
And he achieved rank higher than most of those people because he got 4 stars.
All right.
But he wrote a book, and in his book he said that his mother told him when he was a boy, she said, "The doors of opportunity may not always be open for you when you want them to be open. But whenever they are open, make sure you're there with your bags packed."
All right.
So Martin Luther King said, as we continue and get ready to close, he said that Ralph Waldo Emerson, the great essayist, said in a lecture back in 1871 that if a man can write a better book or preach a better sermon or build a better mousetrap than his neighbor, even if he builds his house in the woods, the world will make a beaten path to his door.
All right.
And that hadn't always been the case. That hadn't always been true. But it will become increasingly true. And so I would urge you to study hard, to burn the midnight oil. And I would say to you, don't drop out of school. And I understand all of the sociological reasons why we often drop out of school. I dropped out of school because there was trouble in my family. I came from a broken home. And it was hard watching my mother suffer. So I got out and went and got a job. Because I didn't want to be a burden on mom. But I say, don't drop out of school.
All right.
I paid a price. I could have been a general in the Air Force, but I dropped out of school. All fortunately, right. God blessed me to get back in school. And now God has blessed me to have 5 college degrees, and I'm a college professor. But I'm telling you, that's the long way around.
Right.
Don't drop out of school. So I will continue and close with these ideas. When you discover what you're going to be in life, set out to do it as if God Almighty called you at this particular moment in history to do it. And don't just set out to do a good Negro job, but do a good job that anybody can do. Don't set out to just be a good Negro doctor, a good Negro lawyer, a good Negro school teacher, a good Negro preacher, a good Negro barber, or a good Negro beautician, or a good Negro skilled laborer. For if you set out to do something like that, just to be a good Negro, something or another, you've already flunked your matriculation for entrance into the University of Integration.
All right.
So, my dear young people, particularly young people, set out to do a good job so well, as has been said earlier today, that the living, the dead, and the unborn couldn't do it any better. And as it's been said already today, if it falls on your lot to be a street sweeper, sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures, sweep streets like Beethoven composed music, sweep streets like Leontine Price sung before the Metropolitan Opera, sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Yes, sweep streets so well that all of the hosts of heaven and earth will have to pause and say, as has been said today, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job or her job well.
Yeah.
And as we close, if you can't be a pine on the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley. But be the best little scrub on the side of the hill. Be a bush if you can't be a tree. If you can't be a highway, just be a trail. If you can't be a sun, be a star. For it isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. We already have some noble examples of black men and women who have demonstrated to us that human nature cannot be cataloged. They, in their own lives, have walked through long and desolate nights of oppression, and yet they have risen up and plunged against cloud-filled nights of affliction to new emblazoned stars of inspiration. And so, from an old slave cabin of Virginia's hills, my great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington, rose to become one of America's greatest leaders and educators.
All right.
He lit a torch in Tuskegee, Alabama, and darkness fled from that city.
All right.
And yes, you should know this because it is in your own city that the Honorable Dr. Calvin Nobles rose up and achieved excellence in everything he has done.
Uh-huh.
Starting as a boy in school and aspiring to be somebody, he went into the United States Navy and rose to one of the senior ranks of the officer corps in the Navy.
Yeah.
But not only did he do that, but he finished college and went on and not only finished his bachelor's degree, but a master's degree and another master's degree and then a PhD degree. But what is so special to me is that he did something else. He learned to fly. You know, when my father was learning to fly in Tuskegee in 1942, the white officer said, "We're wasting our money. We're wasting our time." Because Negroes don't have the intelligence to be able to fly airplanes. And yet, as Dr. Nobles flew me around over the sky, in the sky over this area, and even flew out to where his mother and his family lived, and they came out of the house to wave at, I said, "I'm sure they believe now that a Negro can fly."
All right.
Well, as we close, I just want to say that it's been a beautiful experience to be here today. And I just want to let you know, as I tell students all over the country, and I speak in many elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools, colleges, I say, no dream is too small and no challenge is too great. Be whatever your dream takes you to become, but do it for the sake of the Lord and to uplift your family and your community. Because we know that from crippling circumstances, and many of us came from crippling circumstances. I was not born in a rich family, even though I had a great legacy. But my great-grandfather said, a better thing to have is a good name. So he gave us a good name, and then he gave all his money to Tuskegee Institute. Amen. But finally, we know from studying the history of our great men that all of them came to tell us that we can be somebody. And to justify the conviction of the poet who said, "Fleecy lock and black complexion cannot forfeit nature's claim. Skin may differ, but affection dwells in black and white the same."
All right.
And he also said, "Were I so tall as to reach the pole, or to grasp at the ocean at a span, I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man." And finally, in your life's blueprint, there must be a commitment to the eternal principles of beauty, love, and justice. And as Booker T. Washington said, "Don't let anybody pull you down so low as to make you hate them. Don't let anybody cause you to lose your self-respect to the point that you stop fighting for justice."
All right.
And so, with a powerful commitment, as Dr. King said, I believe we can transform dark yesterdays of injustice into bright tomorrows of justice and humanity. So let us keep going toward the goal of selfhood, to the realization of the dream of brotherhood, and toward the realization of the dream of understanding goodwill, and let nobody stop us. And I close by quoting once more, and I'm quoting now from one of my fraternity brothers, the great bard, the great poet Langston Hughes. One day he wrote a poem entitled "Mother to Son." And the mother didn't always have her grammar right, but she uttered words of great symbolic profundity.
Yes.
She said, "Well, son, I'll tell you, Life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it, boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I's been climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you stop now. And we say, girls, don't you stop now. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kind of hard. For I still going, boys and girls, I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair. Thank you.
We're now reading from my book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, authored by Marshall Washington, Cabinet Abui, Professor of History, University System of Georgia, and the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. I am a product of the Black Revolution. I was born in 1943, and I attended Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University, during the beginning of the Black Revolution. I transferred from Tuskegee to the University of California in my junior year, and I was on that campus during the height of the Black Revolution. It was on the campus of Tuskegee University 3 weeks before his brutal assassination in New York that I encountered a prominent leader of the Black Revolution, Malcolm X, Alhaj Malik al-Shabazz. It was his declaration of war against white supremacy, freedom by any means necessary, the ballot or the bullet, that ignited the spark that lit the fire of Black rebellion and pushed the long smoldering Black resistance to white oppression into a full-scale revolution. When I left Tuskegee,
to thank one who helped us for this special program tonight in honor of Dr. Luther King, and we hope that you will join us again on next Saturday as we will come together in the African American room to be able to discuss relevant issues and that we can say people as an African-American family, as a community of people who are from slavery, still trying to achieve freedom, justice, and equality, things that we need to talk about. And so now we put our Black National Anthem, and we wish you the rest of the weekend will be a blessed one and a safe one.